Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 4th, 2019. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve Wilkes and I explore Club Night at HomebrewCon 2019 in Providence, Rhode Island. What an amazing time. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear, including our tie-dye silicone pint and our brewing rainbow shirt. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you'd do us the favor of rating us on iTunes and maybe leaving a nice comment there, they say that that will help new listeners to find us. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And thanks to everybody who's helping out there. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. We did take the month of June off from posting this audio show, but Basic Brewing Video continued with a couple of episodes, and Patreon supporters got to see those video episodes early and received recipes and exclusive behind-the-scenes videos. So check out patreon.com/basicbrewing to see more details on that. And again, thanks to everybody who is helping us out in that way. We had a great time in Providence at HomebrewCon. Big shout out to everybody who came up and said hi to us in person. That's always fun. And we had a couple of brewery visits planned before the conference, but thanks to weather in Chicago and a certain airline, we were bumped and lost a day. But we recovered and wound up recording 6 shows worth of content at HomebrewCon, and it's all great stuff. In the coming weeks, you'll be hearing from the Rhode Island Brewing Society, the D.C. Homebrewers, Mike Tonsmeyer, the Mad Fermentationist, our friends at Imperial Organic Yeast, and we'll explore the social club at HomebrewCon. We learned a lot while we were there. Had a lot of fun. Coming back home, Steve and I had different flights. He chose to leave early in the morning, and I picked a flight that was a few hours later. And turns out Steve's flight got rescheduled because of an emergency landing the day before in Newark that just screwed everything up as far as the flights going and coming from there. And he wound up coming home on a different flight, a different airline even, and arriving home around midnight. I got lucky and arrived home on time. So it seems like you roll the dice nowadays with air travel. And poor Steve, doggone it, he wanted to get out of there early and wound up coming home even later than I did. So looking forward to Nashville next year because it's within driving distance from Northwest Arkansas. So, of course, there are always risks and hazards associated with driving, too. So, anyway, looking forward to HomebrewCon and the Music City. Isn't that what they call it? Hey, what do these breweries have in common? Untitled Art, Parish, Speculation Black Project, Levante, Separatist Beer Project, Exhibit A, and Central Waters. They all have beers featured in the month of July by our sponsor, Tavor. Tavor is a way to select delicious craft beers you may not be able to find in your area and have them delivered directly to you. It's not a Beer of the Month club where someone chooses beer for you, and it's kind of a surprise every month. You only pay for the beer that you choose over the course of the month. Signing up for Tavor is free. Just create an account at Tavor.com. That's T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com. And download their iPhone or Android app. And you receive notifications for 2 new beers each day that are available for purchase with in-depth tasting notes from Philip at Tavor. And if you're not interested in the beers that you see, no worries. Skip the ones that you don't want. However, when you see something you do want, and you will, don't wait. Just click it to add it to your crate. And your beer arrives fresh every few weeks, allowing you enough time to fill a box and pay the least shipping. What a deal. So why don't you check it out? It doesn't cost anything to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase anything. In fact, if I can ask you a favor, go to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com. Or download the app, and when you sign up, enter the promo code BASICBREWING, all one word, and you'll get $10 off your first shipment of $25 or more. Again, it's free to sign up, and there is no obligation to purchase. Sign up at Tavor.com or with the Tavor app and enter Basic Brewing as the promo code. Thanks to the folks at Tavor for being a continuing sponsor here at Basic Brewing Radio. Let's take a look into the mailbag. Jake from Redding, California writes, "This past weekend, our homebrew club had the Redding Beer Cup, and I decided to enter a few beers. One of them was based on your quick pale ale ideas. I made a New Zealand Pilsner with 3 pounds of Pilsen light dry malt extract in 3 gallons of water, boiled for 30 minutes with half an ounce of Wakatu at 30 and the other one half at flameout. I fermented at 59 degrees Fahrenheit with Saftlager S23 for 3 weeks and then bottle lagered for 6 weeks. The beer was great, says Jake, and my wife and friends really enjoyed it. I entered it in the competition without high expectations. Much to my surprise, I received a call Sunday night that I had won Best of Show. Jake says I was speechless, to say the least. Well, wow. It's an extract beer. Congratulations, Jake. It's always a relief when brewers write in to tell me that they've tried one of my recipes and it turned out well. I guess I don't hear about the clunkers very often. Maybe, thank goodness. While we were at HomebrewCon, I spoke to another brewer, Chris, who is a homebrewer who has generously offered to give my son some advice on entering the field of marine biology. You never know who you might run into at HomebrewCon. Anyway, Chris said he brewed my no-boil hop sampler that we tasted on Basic Brewing Video, and it was a hit with his local club and kind of won a little kind of competition that they were having there. And when you hear the Social Club episode in the next few weeks, you'll hear Steve and me taste a version of my 15-minute pale ale, which also turned out well for the brewer there. So brewers are trying, they're trying the short or no-boil extract recipes that we've tried, and they're having success. So that's a big relief. So thanks to everybody for sharing. Hope you're having a great 4th of July week. Our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity, are saying, declare your independence from propane. They're going to help you do that with $100 off any Warthog controller or system from now until Sunday the 7th. That is a great deal. The $100 discount is automatically taken at checkout, so you don't have to remember to do anything. High Gravity started building electric controllers more than a decade ago because nobody else was doing it. And if you haven't checked out HighGravityBrew.com recently, something new has been added. High Gravity has updated their simplest controller, the Kettle Controller, and added the ability to control additional power modules to their current lineup of Warthog electric brewery controllers. The new power stack module connects to a master controller with power link cables. Up to 4 power stack modules can be connected to each master, controlling up to 5 heating elements. Each module requires its own 30-amp circuit and powers 1 heating element. If you know electrical stuff, you know what I'm talking about. If you're like me and you don't know all the technical details, you can just get a turnkey Warthog electric system and be happy. Check them all out at highgravitybrew.com. And until July 7th, you can save $100 off any Warthog controller or system. What a great deal. High Gravity takes the pain out of propane at highgravitybrew.com. Okay, I look forward to Club Night every year. It's almost unimaginable the amount of creativity and skill that's represented in that big room. So let's go back in time to Providence, Rhode Island at HomebrewCon with Steve of stevesbrewshop.com. Steve Wilkes, oh my gosh.
Hey, James.
Where are we at?
We're at Club Night in Providence, Rhode Island, June the 28th, 2019. Right?
Is that right?
Is it the
28th? Yes, it is.
Thank God. Or something. There's a whole bunch of people in here celebrating homebrew, and I don't know how many clubs we've got, but a lot of them, and they've all brought their best homebrew to share with all the other homebrewers who came to the conference, and so I'm anxious to drink some good beers and visit with some fellow homebrewers from across the United States.
This is our 14th club night.
Wow.
I think.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
All right.
Well, let's go see who we can find. Gary Glass, what's going on here?
So we've got, 2,500 homebrewers, about 60 homebrew clubs serving their beers, meads, ciders, whatever they come up with, and dressed in costume based on where their club is located, their club theme. It is the most fun thing that happens every year. I look forward to it year after year, and I'm excited to be here. I'm sad that it'll take another year for it to come around again, just an all-around awesome time.
Any indication how many kegs of beer are in this room?
Oh, I don't know, but based on the last few years, over 1,000 kegs in this room right now. They will not all be consumed.
This is an event that is a ton of fun. People have a blast, but then they don't get blasted. Most of them do act responsibly, and they know what they're doing. You know, this is not amateur hour. You know, this isn't St. Patrick's Day or New Year's Eve or anything like that. These people are tasting beers because they want to get inspired. They want to learn things, and it's like no other event, like you said.
Yeah, absolutely. No other event. And nowhere else in the world are you ever going to find a more eclectic selection of beers. Every year I am blown away by something that some concoction that I could have never thought of, and most often it's fabulous. You pull it off. That's incredible.
So you've got a beer in your hand. Have you been around? Have you found anything fun yet?
I'm just getting started. But this is a Trappist single, which is one of the best Trappist singles I've ever had.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't had a lot of them. There's not a common beer style, but the brewer here really nailed it, and that's the beautiful thing about this. You're getting these styles of beers. You go to your liquor store, go to your local pub. You're probably not going to find beers like this, and then you're going to find something that's really well executed.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, let's talk about being well executed. This has been a really good conference, and so congratulations to you and the AHA and to the local committees that put this together.
Oh, thank you so much. We work hard, but we love what we do, and it's just awesome seeing it all come together and seeing everybody having a great time.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Tuma, who you are and where are you from?
My name is Colin. I am from Ann Arbor, part of the Ann Arbor Brewers Guild.
All right. So a local club.
Yeah, very local. It only took us 12 hours to get here.
What do you have there?
So I have a sour stout that we had in a club barrel. So a group of us got together, and it's actually a Madrigada Obscura clone, the Jolly Pumpkin recipe that Ron Jeffries put out years ago.
Oh, wow.
So we all brewed it I brewed it a year and a half ago. Kept it in my basement for a little while after we took it out of the barrel, and then finally put it in bottles, and here it is.
Well, I'm honored to be poured a sample of this.
You got it.
And my buddy here, Steve Wilkes.
What you got?
See, he's drawn like moth to the flame to the glass here.
You open a nice looking bottle and people just come running.
So what can you tell about the recipe?
So it's way more dark roasty malt than I would have ever dreamed of putting in a beer like this. When I saw the recipe, I thought to myself, there's no way this will be good. But it's the recipe that Ron Jeffries put out there, and figured, all right, he knows what he's doing. I'll give it a try, and I was very pleasantly surprised.
Wow, it's super tart, but the malt backbone still is in there. And there's a sweetness on the back at the end of it. After you swallow, there's just a little bit of sweetness there.
Yeah, I'm kind of blown away at how clean it is. It finishes really clean, and that tartness just kind of rakes that maltiness away so that you kind of want to drink some more.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Good to hear. I got a lot of it. So.
Great job.
Thank you very much.
Tell me who you are and where you're from.
So my name is Amy Olson, and I am from Michigan.
And what have we got here?
So I'm pouring for you a mead called The Red Woman, and it was a take on a Game of Thrones reference. So it's supposed to be all about the Red Priestess from the Game of Thrones. So we've got sweet red cherries to represent her beauty, and then we had dried cherries to represent her true age, and then we have some scorpion pepper in there to let you know who she's working for. Witch? Red Woman, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's nice and fruity. The cherry comes up front, and then when you swallow, it gets you in the end.
It does get your attention.
So can you talk about how it was made a bit, the technique of how it was put together? If you wanted to make this at home, how would you make it?
Okay, so I do my mead a little bit differently than some others, and what's really kind of nice about that is you can do it in lots of different ways. So my meads, mostly I make a base mead, traditional, and then I'll add my fruit and spices in secondary and let them age. And that's what I did there. So I did rehydrate my dried cherries in honey, and then I used the dark sweet cherry juice. I juiced my cherries and added that to the base mead. And I took half of a scorpion pepper to a 6-gallon batch, and I left it in there for about half a day.
Oh, wow.
And took it out, and that was it. So,
that was enough.
It's plenty.
Yeah, but it's not overpowering, and you don't get it on the front at all. All you get is the fruit and the honey. The honey is, there's a nice floral characteristic to the honey.
That is a Michigan wildflower honey, in case I didn't say that. So.
Oh, well, there you go. But then when you swallow it, it's like, oh, there's some heat.
There it is.
What do you think, Steve?
I had the star thistle mead. It's just absolutely delicious. I haven't had that one yet. But I also had a Melomel. It was black currants and cherries, I think.
We have a raspberry, cherry, black currant Melomel, yes.
Wow.
And it was absolutely delicious. But what I was going to say is that I was able to get a hold of some Michigan cherry juice not too long, now almost a year ago, but did about 12 pounds of honey and enough to make a 5-gallon batch. You know, just cherry juice, didn't put any water in it. Used red wine leaves. I think I used Montrachet, but I've kind of forgotten. Let it ferment out. Aged on oak for about 6 weeks. And then it really turned out really, really well. Wish I had some here to share with you. But mead's just a fascinating animal, I think.
I would agree with you. There's so many different ways you can do things, and none of them are wrong. So
right.
That's wonderful. So the only thing I would caution folks with is with the cherries in general, try to use a tart cherry rather than just a dark sweet cherry, because otherwise you'll wind up with something that tastes like Robitussin. So there's definitely a balance there. But a lot of people like to just get the sweet stuff thinking that it's going to taste better, and it doesn't always ferment the best.
All right.
Well, thank you for sharing this. This is awesome.
You're very welcome.
We're here with the Denny Con.
A Denny Con.
Well, it's the one we want to talk to.
Great. That's good enough.
And you have a new book out.
Yeah, Drew and I have a new book out called Simple Home Brewing. It may sound like it's a beginner's book, but really the more experienced you are, the more you need simple, because you've probably picked up a bunch of habits and things you don't need to do just because somebody told you you should be doing them. And so the whole idea behind that book is to get you to analyze what you're doing when you brew, if it either makes your beer better or makes it more fun to brew. And if it doesn't fulfill one of those two criteria, you don't need to be doing it.
So what is your top, however many you want to name? What are the ones that you recommend to people the most? What do you see them doing? It's like, you don't really need to do that unless it makes you happy.
Throw away your stir plate and never use a yeast calculator again. Seriously, I started using a yeast starter method a couple years ago, and I've been a stir plate guy for years and years. Remember, I was a chemistry major in college, right? So a guy showed up on the AHA forum who knew more about yeast than I thought it was possible to know, advocating what he called the shaken, not stirred method, also known as the 007 or James Bond starter. And basically, you make a quart of 1035 wort. You put it in a gallon container, shake the crap out of it until the container is full of foam, pitch your yeast into that, and 24 hours later when it's at high Corrosion, pitch the whole thing into your beer. No cell counts, no chilling and decanting, because yeast health matters a lot more than cell count.
So in the old days when I made starters in a growler, I was doing as good as... Nowadays, I got the Erlenmeyer flask, I got the stir plate, and all that stuff.
Yeah, it really is. It's a lot back to the way we learned, 20 years ago or more, and it turns out that there was nothing wrong with that. But homebrewers kind of have this urge to be like a commercial brewery. And, you know, if that gives you pleasure in your brewing, fine, go ahead with it. You get to decide what works for you. But on the other hand, if you're like most people, if you want to have a life, if you have a family, if you have other things you want to do with your time, there's a lot of things you can do to simplify your brewing day. Simplifying it will make it more fun. And, you know, my motto is the best beer possible with the least effort possible while having the most fun possible.
Yeah, I like that.
If you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, no kidding. If it's drudgery and you're not looking forward to it, then you're not going to do it.
Yeah, I was on one of the many beer forums I frequented a couple of weeks ago, and somebody had started a thread about what stresses you out when you brew. And people were posting this long list of things. One guy was saying, oh, when I make a yeast starter, I start sweating. I'm so worried about it. You know? And I just said, you know, nothing stresses me out when I brew anymore, because if I'm stressed, I'm missing the point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a hobby, for God's sake.
Yeah. Okay, give us another one. You throw away your stir plate. And another one.
Water treatment is simpler than you think it is. Get a good water analysis. Download a good water calculator spreadsheet. Drew and I both love brewing water. That's what we use and recommend to people. Do the least amount of treatment you can to hit your goal. And treat your water according to the color and flavor of your beer, not the city of origin or anything like that. Start first by adding your mineral salts for flavor. See what that does to your pH, and then use either acid or pickling lime to lower or raise the pH. And it's simple, it's a straightforward approach, and you really don't need to do a whole lot with it.
Yeah, water is the topic that still intimidates me to the point where I just don't play with it. You know, I'm like, I might break something.
You know, and I know I have great water coming out of my well, and it's very consistent. I never have to worry about if it's changing or anything. And I know that I can make any mid-color beer with that water with doing nothing. If I'm making an IPA, I'll toss a teaspoon of gypsum in the kettle. That's it. But I also discovered years ago that although I could make decent pilsners and decent porters, there was something that just wasn't quite right about it. You know, the pilsners were a bit flabby. The porters were a little bit bitey. So that's when I started getting into water treatment. But again, you want to do the least you can do. Don't go overboard. You don't need to match that PPM value exactly. If you're within 10 or 15, it's plenty close enough.
So something like relax, don't worry, have a homebrew.
Make the best beer possible with the least effort possible while having the most fun possible.
Yours is a longer bumper sticker.
Yeah, I know. I know, man. That's okay. It sells for more that way.
Well, good luck to you guys with the book.
Thank you very much, James. Thanks for talking to me about it.
Oh, and say the name again.
Simple Homebrewing. It's available Amazon, should be available at your homebrew store. It's available everywhere. Go buy 4 or 5 copies.
There you go. It makes a perfect Christmas gift.
That's right, man. And I need my retirement fund boosted.
Okay, tell me who you are and where you're from.
I'm Jonathan Keene. I'm from Glastonbury, Connecticut, representing the Middlesex Malters.
And what are we drinking here?
You're drinking nut juice. It's
I never thought I'd like to hear that phrase.
A nice coconut porter with hand toasted coconut.
Oh man, it's good.
But you guys get the judge of that.
It's super drinkable. It's roasty, but the coconut comes through.
Yep.
It's kind of like a, what are these? Is it Mounds Bar? Almond Joy's got nuts, Mounds don't. So it's like a Mounds Bar.
Yeah, it is. And it's finished. It's really nice and clean. It's nice and fruity. Again, the coconut comes through really nice. Just a nice light porter. It's just what it ought to be.
Man, I just want to drink more and more of this.
I like to drink that by the liter and then fall over.
So how do you work with a coconut?
I put it in a cast iron pan and just stir it lightly until it gets to the appropriate color. And then I put it into a mesh bag, dump it right into the fermenter, and let it sit for 3 days. That's it. And then I take it out and it's like, wow, it's a lot of coconut. It doesn't take very much. A pound per 5-gallon batch.
And at the end of fermentation, I'm assuming.
At the end of fermentation, yes. Not during active fermentation.
And are you using like Baker's coconut, which is sweetened, or using not sweetened coconut?
Not sweetened coconut chips, the red mill, Bob's Red Mill.
Oh, yeah.
Works very well.
Man, this is really good.
Great. Very nice beer.
It's good to meet you.
It's good to meet you.
And thank you for serving me your nut juice.
You like it a nut juice, no?
I like it a juice, yes?
Yes.
All right, tell me who you are and where you're from.
Sure. Jesse Ellis from South Coast, Massachusetts.
We caught up with you at the social club.
Yes, that's right.
And now what are we drinking?
Now we're drinking a margarita goza. So it was a traditional goza recipe, coriander salt, the whole nine yards. And then to get the tequila and lime flavor, I made a tincture with about 2.5 cups of white tequila, the peels of 8 limes, and a handful of Hungarian oak cubes. So I wanted to give it some barrel character.
Huh.
And I let that sit for about the 2 weeks that it took for this to finish up in primary. And then it ended up being about 1 cup of the tequila tincture in a keg, standard size keg.
Huh.
And I threw the juice from the limes into primary as well.
It's really good.
Yeah,
it's a little salty, which goes along with the the margarita thing.
Definitely should be. I definitely pick up the margarita notes. And cheers to that. And then the little bit of salt, it reminds me when I was a kid, I'd go to a tavern with my dad, and he'd put a little salt in his beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of got that kind of nice little retro feel.
Well, very nice. Good job again.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Steve.
Okay, tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name is Scott Buchanan. I'm from the Fitchburg Order of Ale Makers. I live in Leominster, Mass.
And what am I drinking here?
You're drinking a pumpkin lambic. It's a traditional lambic recipe that I added pumpkin to, fermented it out, and it ended up a little dry. I still spiced it with pumpkin spices, but still didn't quite like it, so I blended it back with a bock to increase the residual sweetness, and got the body just right, and I'm pretty happy with that beer.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's... you want to take a... I'm sharing my glass with Steve. My cold sore is almost healed. So it's nice and tart, but whatever you did to increase the body, it worked because it's nice and substantial in the body. You get a little bit of the spice in there as well. And I've never had a pumpkin lambic before.
There's one commercial available. Boulevard has done it a couple times. And I hadn't seen it when I thought of this. One of my buddies brewed a winter ale, and it went sour. And I was like, this isn't quite right, but I like the idea of the spices with the sour. If you do it right, it could work. And so this was in my mind for a while, and I did it.
What do you think, Steve?
It's a really nice beer. I don't usually really like pumpkin beers. I think that's a damn good beer.
Yeah.
Excuse my French.
How did you treat the pumpkin?
The pumpkin, it was actually, I used a little bit of just sweet pumpkin and then Hubbard squash also, which squash gives you a little more pumpkin flavor than pumpkin does, actually. So that's why I used that. And I grated them up and I put them in the, I roasted them and I put them in the secondary so that the proteins in there could help the lambic and really increase those sour qualities to it.
Nice.
Well, it's a great job. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
First of all, tell me who you are and where you're from.
My name is Craig Tambell. I'm from Uxbridge, Massachusetts, and I'm a part of the Wizards Homebrew Club.
Cool. And what am I drinking?
You are drinking the Velveteen Dream, which is a saison that has some golden raisins in there, cacao nibs, and then is colored purple with some pea flowers.
It looks like a concoction that a wizard would come up with.
It is, and it tastes like a dream.
So tell me, give me the details on how you made it.
So it's based upon a wrestler by the name of Velveteen Dream, who's kind of a cross between Jimi Hendrix and Prince. So the purple part is obvious for Prince, and then there's a bunch of oatmeal and a little bit of Malolactic malt in there to get a little bit of creaminess and smoothness. And then used a Belgian Saison 3 yeast from White Labs to give it a little punch, a little fruitiness that I think balances well with the chocolate and the raisins.
It's fun. It's a whole lot of fun. And it's tasty as well. What temperature did you ferment at?
I started it out in the mid-60s, and then after about 3 days, I just slowly ramped it up to about 80 degrees to finish.
It was very nice. Good job.
Thank you.
First of all, tell me who you are and where you're from.
I'm Clive Davis, and I'm from Sheffield, Massachusetts.
And what were you going to say?
I was going to say, the very first time I saw your video on YouTube, it was one of those Halloween specials where James was wearing a wacky wig. And I thought to myself, who are these clowns?
And now you're still thinking,
well,
but who are these clowns?
But I've grown to love everything that you guys do, so I just want to say thank you. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. What have you found that's good tonight?
The Saratoga Thoroughbreds had a really tasty Kentucky Common, really quaffable, like sort of dark cream ale style, and it was really delicious. So that's what I recommend. So, yeah.
Nice.
Okay, so who are y'all and where are you from?
I'm Pia. This is Russell.
Yeah, Russell.
And we live in Brooklyn, and our homebrew club is the Brewman Aries. We're part of the
name of your club?
Brewman Aries.
Brewman Aries, okay. And
part of the Pour Standards in Staten Island.
And what are we drinking here?
This is a Belgian wheat beer, and we used yuzu and Japanese Sancho peppercorns, which are sort of like Sichuan peppercorns. So very citric notes and a little bit of a tingle from the peppercorns, hopefully.
a little bit of a tingle.
Yeah, a little bit of a tingle, yeah.
So they have a compound that it's not spicy, but it makes your mouth a little bit numb, and people feel a tingling kind of sensation when they eat the peppercorns. So.
Wow. It's really good.
Thank you.
You get the spice. And so are you trying to sabotage all the other beers afterwards if you numb everybody's tongue?
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit, probably, you want to just drink more because like your tongue is tingling. You're like, I think I need something to drink.
So. Right, exactly. So we're just trying to help everyone by making you more thirsty.
I think if we made it again, I'd probably add a little bit more body, but I like it. It's nice. It's interesting. I like the flavors. So.
I don't know. It's pretty dang good as it is.
Thank you so much.
So talk about how you added the spices or how you brewed the beer.
So the wheat beer, the malt and yeast profile are pretty traditional. It's a pretty much 50-50 grain bill with the flaked wheat and Belgian Pilsner malt. We did put some oats in there for a little more body and head retention.
Aromatic malt?
There's a little bit of... There is Munich,
a little bit of Munich.
And so we did that. At the very end of the boil, we added yuzu zest, freeze-dried yuzu zest, and also the Sancho peppercorns with 5 minutes left in the boil. And the hops are also a bit untraditional. We used Citra and Galaxy hops in there.
And Hallertau for
bittering?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
You can tell that you two brew together.
Yeah. Well, because it's nice to have someone be able to be like, hey, what did we use for this?
Although we do take notes. We don't want John or Doug, our teachers, to think that we're not taking notes of all of our beers. So.
Yeah.
Well, this is very nice.
Thank you so much. I'm
glad you told me about it.
Thank you so much. It's so great to meet you guys.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks for your podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, tell me who you are and where you're from.
We're from Endicott, New York. We're brewers in the Endicott region.
And I know you. You're Dave King.
You betcha. I'm president of the club. We're in Central New York, and we're all really into our homebrew, but we watch basic brewing. We listen to it, and we watch it, because we got to learn that basic stuff.
And we see you every year at the conference.
Yep, I like to be a regular. It's only been about 12 years that I've been coming. So, and I always pick up a little bit of something every year. There's so much good information here. But it's so great to see the old friends again. You guys are always here. It's excellent when you come by. And all the staff from AHA, wonderful people. The other club members, the judges. We do the second round judging. I steward because I don't have any taste buds. But but I steward.
Well, I'm tasting your beer. And I think you do have taste buds because this tastes delicious. What are we drinking?
It's my dad's brown ale. It's an 18% rye brown IPA. And the secret, I think, to the good malt flavor is Thomas Fawcett brown malt. A friend of mine is a brewer up near Syracuse, and he came up with it. He's always used their brown malt, and he says it's really important. So when I was up visiting, he came around the back and gave me about a third of a bag of it. So this is the first chance I've had to use it, and I really think it makes a difference. I have heard that the British malts, British specialty malts, are much better. I'm a believer. That's the one. I see their crystal malts, I think, are more flavorful, and the brown malt, I think, really makes a difference.
This is a delicious beer.
It's very good, and I can tell that this is a labor of love. It's got a lot of, I mean, you know, it's a much more, a lot of times brown ales are kind of like the stepsister of beers. You know, they're kind of like, okay, it's a brown ale. This is a really flavorful beer, and you're right, the malt comes through so crisp and full-bodied and malty and caramelly, and a little bit of that burnt sugar in a really good way. It's really a nice beer, and the hops don't get in the way.
And why? What do you think the rye brings to it?
Well, it's supposed to bring some spiciness, and I think it brings some mouthfeel to it, and I really like it. I've used 18% is common. I make a red IPA and I make a brown IPA, and I use about the same amount of rye in both of them, and I think it adds a little bit to it. And it's easy. A lot of people talk about how you can get a stuck mash with rye, but I've never had any trouble with it, and it mills all right. So yeah, it's good to use. I like it.
Good job, Dave.
Great. Thank you, James. Appreciate it. We'll see you on Basic Brewing.
Okay, tell me who you are and where you're from.
I'm Dave Clark from Binghamton, New York.
And you're here with the other Dave.
I'm here with Dave King and the Brewers in the Endicott Region Beer Club.
And what's Steve drinking?
This is a rhubarb ginger mead that I made. I usually use my rhubarb for making rhubarb pie and rhubarb wine. And I had just a little bit left over last year, and I decided to make rhubarb ginger mead. So
I'll turn it over to you, Steve, since you're the mead expert. You ask the questions.
Well, okay. Well, first I want to compliment you. The rhubarb and the ginger both come through, but neither are overwhelming. But both of those flavors can be overwhelming. So tell me about the recipe. How big is the batch? How much honey? Where'd you get the honey?
I got the honey actually from Agway, but it was a local honey to central New York.
Okay,
that's an apple blossom honey.
Nice.
And I think it had about, it's a 3-gallon batch, and it had, I think, 8 or 9 pounds of orange blossom honey.
Okay. And what was the yeast that you used?
I used beer yeast, actually.
Nice.
Yeah.
Which one?
That I don't remember.
Okay. Well, I use beer yeast too quite frequently in mead, and I find that they do a really good job, but I also use wine yeast, so it's always of interest to me. Did you do a nutrient schedule in it?
Yes, I did.
And what was that like?
Just the standard, I can't remember the exact without looking at my notes, but,
no problem.
You know, after 24 hours and 48 hours, I think it was 3 additions.
Nice. And then, so how long did you let it? So once it fermented out, did you rack it into a secondary? Then how long do you let it set in the secondary?
It sat in the secondary for probably 9 months.
Right.
Yeah.
And was it on fruit the whole time or just for a short period of that time? Or I should say, how did you treat the rhubarb?
The rhubarb, what I did was I cut it into 1/4-inch lengths and froze it. And then I took the frozen rhubarb and put it into a bucket and covered it with sugar. And that extracts the juice, the rhubarb juice.
Right.
And then I ditched the fruit, if you will, right, the rhubarb, and just used the juice.
Oh, nice. And so you added the juice. Did you add that then in the secondary or at bottling or?
No, that went right in at the beginning, in fermenting.
Fermented.
Yeah.
Nice.
That, the sugar, the ginger, all went into the fermenter.
Well, that kind of explains why the fruit character is a little bit more subdued,
yeah,
which is appropriate for rhubarb, actually.
Yeah, I didn't want it to be overpowering.
Right.
Which it can be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember as a kid, grandma's rhubarb pie. I couldn't handle it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you put so much sugar and strawberries in strawberry rhubarb pie, because you know you need to overpower that rhubarb, that tartness of the rhubarb.
Wow. Well, I got a sip, and it's delicious. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Michael Ferguson, it's been a long time since we talked. The last time I think I talked to you was that we were evaluating the you were tasting an experiment where they were testing to whether you could taste decoction or not.
Decoction as opposed to melanoidin, yes.
Yeah, and you did it.
I was so happy that I did it. But you know what? The trippy part was I listened to myself because I gave that talk earlier. I listened to myself and I was like, wait a minute, follow the rules. And I did, and then it became easy. But at first it was like, you know, which one is it? I mean, the melanoidin does give it a flavor. But I think I was lucky because I think they overdid the melanoidin. If they had backed off on the melanoidin, they could have probably fooled me on that, right?
So what have you been up to lately?
Well, you know, I'm a business development director for Taprite. So I'm basically a dispense tech salesperson, you know. I'm on the beer side. We do beer and soda and the whole bit. But now we do basically the whole nine yards. And I found out the real meaning of that term. we do everything from keg spears to the faucet, wow. Including the faucet.
Wow.
Yeah.
So have you what have you found here that's fun and impressive?
Well, I've actually come across my first two beers were unfortunate because they were not right. They weren't incredibly horrible, but they weren't right. So I did go over to Rhode Island Brewing Society and found several really good beers over there and a couple of good, really good meads. These guys are pretty good at what they do.
Yeah, we spent a long time, probably too much time, with them at the social club.
Right.
And they are knocking it out of the park.
They are really knocking it out of the park. This is a Wild Schwartz beer, and it is stupendous.
Wow.
It is stupendous. And before that, I had a Tale of Two Quads.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Is that good or what?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the barrel aged blended.
With the cherry, you know, they had the tart cherry blended with the barrel age. It's very nice.
Yeah,
very nice.
Yeah,
you know, I really liked it. So, I'll be back there.
Well, they're all going to have big heads after you know hearing all this coverage that I've been giving them on the podcast.
Well,
so
you know,
maybe it's well deserved.
It's well deserved. I mean, when you're nailing it like that, you're knocking it out of the park, and you bring 47 beers to a show, beers and meads, I mean... And it's in your hometown. So best foot forward, and that's the way it should be. Everybody should think that way when they come to something like this. Best foot forward.
It's great to see you again. It's great to talk to you.
To see you, man. Thank you so very much. You know, did you get a chance to see my talk this morning?
I did not.
Yeah, it was too early.
But it's gonna but it's gonna be on it's gonna be online on the website though.
That's what they say. So I might have to watch it to see how I did.
Thank you, sir.
No, thank you.
Matt Misfelt of Patriot Brewing Supply up in Omaha, Nebraska. How are you?
I'm good, James. How are you doing?
I'm well. What have you found in this massive hall of lots and lots of beers that's good to drink?
Well, you know, last year when we talked, there was a lot of really cool spruce tip beers. This year, there really seems to be a theme of being in New England of this kind of new IPA craze. You may have heard of it. It's called the New England IPA.
Yeah, it's ruining beer as we know it.
Well, you know, here they seem to enjoy it. It's like a local style. But there's a lot of good beers here, but a lot of creative beers. There's one club over here that had a peach cobbler. Oh, my gosh. It reminds me of peach cobbler. I'm a big cobbler fan. So out of all the beers I've had tonight, I have to say that was my best. And they're out of New Haven. It's called Brew Haven.
Oh, I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah. It was a good beer. I actually ran into Bob Stemsky.
Ah.
And I said to him, he goes, oh, I like peach beers. I don't know if that's a good accent or not, but that's what he liked.
Oh, I like peach beers. No, that's more Canadian. That's Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Oh, there you go. No, but he went over that way. But a lot of solid beers here in general. A lot of cool displays. Like last year we were in Portland. You know, we had a lot of neat, fisherman-oriented ones. And you got there's a club over here. They've got a boat with a shark. I would recommend they get a bigger boat. Rhode Island Brewing, that's who it is. Rhode Island Brewing Society.
Now, you are a homebrew store owner.
Yes, sir.
And so here at HomebrewCon, there's a track just for you guys.
Yep.
Do you find useful stuff in that? I mean, is it an educational opportunity for you as well to kind of learn things about your industry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. This year is kind of unique for me. The one key event is really the industry kind of overview. They usually kick that off first day on Thursdays. But I'm a BJCP certified judge, so I judged. And the first session went a little long. There was quite a few entries this year, but it took a little bit longer to get through the judging, so I missed out on that session. And that's the one thing I did miss, but that's the one thing I like to try to go to. And then we have a lot of industry specific about how to, you know, generate or, you know, make awareness of your brand. And, you know, with you and Steve and your partnership, obviously he has a good venue for that. For me, this is my opportunity. So, I mean, you know, you have...
What's the website?
Yeah, it's basicbrewing.com. No.
No.
Oh, the other one. No, it's patriothomebrewsupply.com. And like I said, we're in Elkhorn, Nebraska, just outside of Omaha. And we've got a really great customer base. They're awesome. And, you know, I come here to learn more so I can give more back to the customer. So that's what I'm here for. And, again, this is a great, you know, this is a great festival this year, convention. And I look forward to next year.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll make it three in a row.
Well, we appreciate your support as well, Matt.
Yep. Yeah, James. You know, like I told you before, you know, I started watching your videos. And that's what, you know, kind of get me on this path. And I still watch, you know, your website all the time. I'm a Patreon supporter. So I love what you do. And I really like it. And I think it's inspired a lot of folks. So, you know, thanks to you and Steve. If I had a beer, I'd toast you. But it's audio, so we're good.
Well, let's go get one.
Let's do that.
First of all, tell me who you are and where you're from.
I am Paul Wilson from Chesapeake, Virginia.
And what's your club?
Seven Cities Brewing.
And tell me what I got here.
There's a red IPA made with Red X grain.
Right. It's tasty. We did a little experiment yesterday where we tasted a beer made with 100% Red X, and it's delicious. Tell me what you think it brings to the beer.
Well, the color just adds to the character. It's a standard IPA recipe, and the Red X just adds to the character to what you're drinking. And a lot of it is the presentation. It's a little undercarbonated, but otherwise it really, I'm getting a lot of good reports on it.
Yeah. It's delicious. Tell me about the hops.
The hops are just Kent Golding, a couple of hop additions midway and then at the end. And not that much. It comes up to about a 40 IBUs.
Huh. So in this land of hazy, juicy New England IPAs, this is more of a traditional take.
More of a traditional, closer to an English bitter. So it's not U.S. It's more across the pond, as you would say.
It's a great drinker. You know, you could sit back and have a couple of pints of this and.
Yes, it's only about 5.4%.
Yeah.
So it's very drinkable.
Yeah. I'll say. Very well done. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Tell me who y'all are and where you're from.
My name's Eric and Rebecca. She's over there. We're from Toronto, Canada.
And we brought our baby.
Oh, yeah. I just hit your baby in the head with my mic cord. Sorry.
And we have a bunch of our homebrew club and area members with us. Jesse's sitting over there in the chair ignoring us, but...
Tired.
You guys want to go too?
Yep. Daryl Kelly from Toronto, Canada.
Steve Cameron from Whippy.
All right. Well, welcome. What are we drinking?
So we're drinking a Doppelbock. It's about 80% Munich 2 from Weirmann, and the rest is Pilsner. I think it's cleanly fermented. It's about a year and a half old now.
That's delicious.
This is the same recipe that we brewed for our wedding like years ago, and we've been like slowly like rebrewing it to get it like... just to what we want. So there we go.
What do you think?
It's a very good beer. It's a really nice Bock beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is 8%?
It's 8%. A lot of the traditional styles are 8 to 9%, but every time homebrewers brew them, they're like 10 to 12%.
Right.
So I just tried to go traditional.
I think this is the one at our wedding that like really caused people to have some trouble the next morning. So.
Well, I can see why. It's extremely drinkable.
Yeah,
it's very malty. There's a kind of a spice to the malt on my palate, and of course my palate's worn out. But do you get like a spice from the malt as well?
Yeah, I do. I get posh spice.
So It's that time of night.
Yeah, it is.
So talk about the details.
Sure. So it's about a year and a half old now. It's brewed with WLP 833, the German Bock Lager yeast, of course. And just a really tasty beer. A little bit of Care Munich 3, just enough to make it a little darker. Munich 2, and lots of Munich 2, mostly about 80%. And then the rest, just to fill in, get some diastatic power, is Pilsner.
Well, it's delicious. And I'm not really sure. I'm going to have a little more, I think, just to make sure.
Me too. Cheers, guys. This beer is not about hops, but what are the hops?
It's a Hallertau middle fruit.
Okay.
Traditional.
Yeah.
And nothing after 60.
Good job.
Yeah. Man. I would be proud to brew that. It's delicious.
And it's imported.
What?
And it's imported from Canada.
Oh, that's right.
And not too many imported beers at this conference.
It flew on a plane.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
I won't make a joke about how nice it is.
Oh, see, they
haven't make that joke.
Yeah, and Eric hasn't apologized yet. So,
I'm sorry about that.
I'm so sorry.
Thank y'all very much.
Thanks for having us on.
Okay, tell me who you are and where you're from.
I'm Eric Lowe from Austin, Texas.
And you're here representing
the Austin Zealots Homebrew Club, as well as my meadery, Meridian Hive, in Austin.
Awesome. Now, what are we drinking?
This is the 2014 Cuvée de Tommy clone. This is one of our, I think it was probably a fifth or a sixth in the series of sour beers. We did it as a club in a barrel. We started with a Cuvée de Tommy clone recipe, which is in the sour beers book. And it really took off. The interest in the club was so great that since then we've done other sour beer projects at local breweries. And it's been huge, and it's still going to this day. There's still tons of interest in it. It's been a lot of fun.
In fact, your whole board is sour, right?
Yeah, today we have 11 barrel projects on the board, which represents probably at least 50% of the barrel projects that our club has done. So it's we're really proud of the barrel project, and it's been a lot of fun for the club.
Well, this is a delicious beer. It's nice and tart, but it's substantial as well. It's there's plenty of malt backbone left to support the tartness on it, and it's delicious. Tell me about how this beer was put together.
Yeah, so we started with the base beer, which is basically the Judgment Day, which is a really great Belgian dark strong. If you haven't had it, out of San Diego County. And then I created a commercial culture from a bunch of Russian River, Bone Goose, Lindemans, a bunch of other commercial lambics and sours, and started that and pitched the barrel back in the beginning. And since then, we've re-inoculated new barrels with that culture. Some of the other barrels, we've used different cultures from Jester King and some other custom cultures. So we kind of diverged a little bit from there, but I would say if you're going to do a barrel project for your club, my advice would be pick something high gravity, over 10% potential alcohol, around 1090 or bigger. And the reason for that is that your chances of success, I found, are far greater with the higher gravity beers to get a sour that's going to be drinkable and it's going to have some aging potential versus trying to do a lower gravity. Those often will go acetic, or they'll get off flavors, and they tend to not age as well. And as a club, you do these barrel beers, that beer's going to be around for a while. You're probably not going to crush that by the pool.
Yeah. So, yeah, this does have enough residual malt sweetness to support it. It's very drinkable. So what was the malt bill like?
It's a lot of Pilsner malt. There is quite a bit of caramel malt, as I recall, and some dark candy sugar. We take some raisins, and my favorite touch is you take raisins and you take some of the first runnings and you boil them down to caramelize them and put the raisins in with that, and that gives you an amazing flavor. And I have to tell you, I've done Belgians since where I've used that same trick, and it works great. So
wow.
Tommy was onto something there.
Yeah, that's cool. So tell me about your meadery.
So my meadery in Austin, We distribute now in around 10 states across the U.S. We specialize in draft mead. So mead's around 6% alcohol. We are in Texas where it's hot. It's above 90 degrees 7 months out of the year. So we want something that you can crush by the pool all day long. We've recently come out with some new releases that are on the lower alcohol spectrum and are planning to do even more lower alcohol meads in the future, and are really enjoying playing in that space and are beginning to become pretty well known. We've won many, many medals at the Mazer Cup, the world's largest mead competition for our draft meads, and we're very proud of those.
Wow, excellent. Well, I know people around the Austin area, and it sounds like a good excuse to go visit.
Yeah, some people who have a lot of cats, I hear.
No comment. Well, thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Well, Steve Wilkes and Zod O'Connor now. It's time to wrap up this coverage of the club night so I can drink more beer at a faster pace, because the time is coming close.
These never last long enough. And
that's what she said.
And it's sad.
That's what she said.
But you got to try anyway.
That's what he said.
This has been, the beers here have been awesome. I think coming from the Northwest, this is the first time I think I've been hopped out.
Oh, wow.
And been focused on the malty beers I knew the Northwest for. And I got to say, they really showed up with their meads.
Oh, yeah.
The meads have been spectacular here tonight. And the enthusiasm and the club nights, you just nailed it again. This is what you come for. Everything else is just time to either prepare for this night or recover from it.
Yeah. Steve?
I got nothing. I've been having a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's great not only to sample all this stuff, but to talk to all the people who have come up to us and just said hi and shook their hands and all that stuff. So, yeah, club night proves again, I think it's the best beer event in the country.
I've met folks from Canada.
Yeah.
I've met folks from New England, all over New England. I've talked to people from Pennsylvania. I've talked to people from California.
Talked to people from Sweden.
From Sweden, that's right. It's just quite an amazing event.
Yep. All right, cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Well, thanks again to Steve of stevesbrewshop.com and Zod O'Connor and everybody else we talked to. Bob Stemsky was there somewhere, but we never saw him that night. That place is huge. But you will hear Bob in upcoming shows, so don't worry about that. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form at basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.